Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. The Alloy Orchestra is a group of multi-talented musicians with widely diverse abilities and based near Boston, Massachusetts. This tiny orchestra provides live in-house orchestral backup to the Chaplin, Keaton, and other classic silent films of the 1920s. Our guest in this edition of Radio Curious is Terry Donahue, an Alloy Orchestra partner and a skilled player of the accordion, musical saw, drums, and bells, to name only a few of his instruments. Terry Donahue and I visited by phone from his home near Boston, Massachusetts, on May 10th, 2013, and began with his description of the composition of the orchestra membership.
More than just myself and Ken Winokur, there's also Roger Miller, who plays the synthesizer. Myself and Ken Winokur play percussion, and we double on other instruments like musical saw and clarinet and accordion and whatever needs to be done.
So when you create the music for silent movies, how do you choose the sound, the music, to accompany what you see?
We basically let the film tell us where we want to go. Our composing style is, I think, a little bit unusual in that we compose collectively. So a lot of our ideas are improv-based, and we just let the film tell us where it wants us to go. We match up whatever sounds and whatever feel and whatever mood we think is appropriate to what the scene that we're doing at the time.
When you say you compose collectively, how does that work?
Well, once the film is chosen, which is a whole other long story, once we choose a film, we'll sit down, the three of us, and we'll watch it. And we'll all take notes for about the first 5 minutes, and then we put our pencils down and get wrapped up in the film. And then we go into the studio, and we just start the film rolling, and we just play along. And whoever comes up with an idea first, we go with that idea, and if we think it works, and on a basic level, we'll record that and move on to the next scene, and then we'll go scene by scene by scene through the entire movie and then go back and feel and listen and think, do we like what we started out doing, and then mold it to fit the scene.
Terry, once you've molded the music to fit the scene, what do you do next?
Well, the next step is to make each scene blend into the next one, and so on, until you have however many scenes, 100, 200 different cues, blend smoothly into one seamless score. So that's our basic idea. Our notating styles are drastically different. Roger Miller on the keyboard writes his out in musical notation because he's playing the keyboard and he can actually sit and read it. Ken Winokur and myself write ours out more in like longhand. Ken writes his out in Word, and then next to whatever he thinks the scene is called, he'll write the instrument he needs to, or in little notations. And I'll do it in big block letters so I can read it from across the room. So I have little triggers that trigger the memory. And my idea is to get to the point where I don't even need to look at the music. I'm watching the film, and I know which scene is coming next, so I know musically what's coming next. Sometimes that's easier said than done, though.
How long does that transformation take?
Well, from start to finish, usually we give ourselves 2 to 3 months from the first time we look at it till our premiere date. Of course, deadlines can sometimes change that, but that's what we like to give ourselves.
The films that I've seen, Slapstick Masters with Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton, have a lot of emotion. What kinds of sounds do you create to convey the emotion of the particular scene in those movies, or any movie?
Well, again, we let the film tell us where to go, and just basically what we try to do is translate what we see into what the audience hears. There's some pretty basic tricks. You know, if it's a happy love scene, then we're playing in a major key, and we'll use instruments like the orchestral bells or the accordion or piano or harp. If there's, you know, the villain, we'll get more of a negative minor key with maybe a clarinet or deep strings or French horns. With our percussion rack, I have a whole bunch of gongs and pieces of random metal that I use as gongs as well as cymbals, and they range from pieces of metal being played as more of the negative to the gong to the cymbals and higher up. So you mold those basically for mood. And then we, again, just play what we feel is appropriate. And between the three of us, we have a wide range of influences and then a wide range of, you know, what we think is appropriate. So if the three of us feel like it's working, then that's generally good enough for us.
And for the listeners.
And hopefully for the listeners.
Well, let's move to the effect of live music that you present with the silent movies compared to what we see now in talkies, if that's the right term, where the movie has a soundtrack that comes with it.
Well, we feel like our job is more multi-layered than the music you would score for a talkie. There's so much underscoring that goes on in a talking picture that's just so quiet and just underneath it, and basically it's almost subliminal, with then big patches of grandiose coming in between them. With the silent films, what we feel like our job is, one, we're playing the background or underscored music. Two, we have to help take the place of the dialogue that isn't there. And three, we're adding our own sound effects or Foley work at the same time. So it's so more multi-layered, and the fact that we have to do it live and with just three people, it can be, you know, quite challenging for us, and I think exciting and interesting for the audiences.
What are the challenges that you face?
Well, the first challenge is getting a film that we think is really powerful and impactful, and will we get the rights and the accessibility to that film? That's the first problem. And then, you know, musically, it's just, again, each film is taking us somewhere, and we have to be flexible and open enough to play with whatever that film is asking us to do. For example, when we first started doing this, Roger Miller, our keyboard player, came in a few years after we had already been established. Our last keyboard player, Caleb Sampson, passed away. So we knew Roger, and Roger stepped in. And he came in with some, I think, preconceived notions that he wanted to play all these elaborate pieces of music. And we had to say, you know, hold on a second. You know, it's not as much about the music as it is about the film. So we are completely subservient to these films. So it's okay to play something that would be a lot more simple and melodic and just easy to play than something that you would write or compose if you were playing just a musical concert. So it's the pairing up with the film that is the big challenge, and so that's the real hurdle. And then getting from, especially in the short films or the comedy films, they all happen so fast, and they're usually at a more frenetic pace. So physically, getting from here to here to here, if I'm picking up the accordion and playing a melody, then I have to get to the musical saw, and then I have to get to the drums, and I have to think, it's like playing chess. You're thinking that much farther ahead so I can get gracefully out of here and into the next piece and hit my cues.
Can you give us some examples of pairing up the music to the film to what the viewer sees?
Well, I guess the shining example would be Buster Keaton's The General. When we first started scoring this, we had probably more conversation about this piece than any other, because one, it's, you know, everybody knows this film. It's always one of the top 100 films ever made, and it's this masterpiece. And what we, and plus it's Buster Keaton, so everyone expects comedy. Yet ultimately, it's a very dramatic, moving piece. So we were questioning, one, do we overplay the comedy, which we decided not to do ultimately because the comedy we figured would take care of itself, and if we played it overly dramatic, that would actually help the comedy. And the next obstacle for us was there is so much train in that film, and our instinct is to jump right to the train, the tuk-a-tuk-a-tuk-a-tuk-a-tuk-a-tuk-a, rhythmically with the drums. But we were afraid to overpower the piece. But luckily, after watching it, you know, the first scene, it basically says Buster Keaton has two loves. One is the girl, the other is the train. So we were like, perfect. Now we can play the beautiful love melody for the girl, and we can work with that melody and mold it to fit different scenes and different emotions, and then we can use the train. And since it's one of the three main characters, and the movie's named after it, then we can play as much train as we want. And then the next step was, how do you vary the emotions of the train using the drums and using the pieces of music that are going over the drums? So my challenge is playing, you know, the good train, the bad train, the chase train, the train that's chasing the other train. So it's like really a lot of subtle stuff that I don't know if people notice overtly, but I think subliminally, it really helps make that powerful.
Well, Terry, I want to ask you, how do you vary the emotions of the train? But before you answer, I want to say that in this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Terry Donahue by phone from his home near Boston, Massachusetts. Terry is one of the members of the Alloy Orchestra, which provides music for silent films. They present their work around the world. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. So, Terry, how do you vary the emotions of a train?
Well, from my perspective, being one of the drummers, and I predominantly in that film play the tom-toms, and I use three tom-toms and a bass drum, and so there's different accents you can use. There's different tonal qualities you can use with the four drums. The example would be, you know, when there's the bad guys, you know, it's heavier, so there's more bass drum in the floor tom. When it's more of a the train with Buster Keaton and his girlfriend riding along, then it's more of the high tones and the high toms and the upward motion with the you know, low to high on the drums. And then there's just so many little subtle things you can do with accents and combinations of those, as well as we also have this table of, we call them cake pans. They're not officially cake pans, but you kind of get the idea, and it's almost like an out of tune steel drum that we use. And so that in combination, you know, if there's more of a comic train, then that drum, those drums would be utilized. And then Ken with his snare drum or cymbals or turning the snare drum on and off and playing different accents with that, all in combination with Roger on the keyboard having different tonal sounds going on at the same time. So he's working the, you know, again, if there's the dastardly train, it's more you know, overtly negative and lower strings, and then if there's more of the happier train, then he's, you know, either piano or harp or higher strings. So you can just kind of naturally mold these things, and then, again, blending them all together is the real trick.
You've mentioned approximately 15 different instruments played by three different people. Can you describe for us what your setup on stage below the screen looks like?
Well, it pretty much starts and ends with our, we call it a rack of junk. We have two tripod stands with a cross piece that we built that's about 6 feet high and about 7 or 8 feet long. From that, we hang an assortment of gongs, a bedpan, horseshoes, truck springs, bells, pipe chimes, any number of things across the top layer. And then the second layer, about medium height, is a layer of cymbals. And then the lower layer is a drum set that has been taken apart. So from right to left, there's three tom-toms, and then the table, like I mentioned before, with the out-of-tune steel drum contraption that we built, to the bass drum, to the snare drum, to cymbals. So that's where that's the basis of it. And then Roger, again, is stationed on his synthesizer, and we have musical saw and accordion and clarinet and whatever other instruments like around the periphery of it. So it's a visual experience as well as a musical experience.
When you travel to a new venue to perform, how many of your various instruments do you carry with you?
We carry everything but the drum set. So it's a little bit of a challenge dealing with airplanes and their restrictions. When we started this 23 years ago, it was a lot easier to fly with more stuff. And that's what we based our whole setup on. So every time we add a new instrument, we have to say, how much does that weigh? How big is that? How are we going to transport it? So we find a way ultimately to make it work.
Do you check your instruments or carry them in the cabin?
I carry my accordion, having learned the hard way many times. But everything else gets checked, and that can be a bit of an adventure as well.
So, Terry, let's go back 23 years ago and time prior to when you were with the Alloy Orchestra. What was your musical experience?
Well, I was at that point a rock and roll drummer, mostly. I had gone through a series of failed bands, and it was like going through breakups with these relationships where I would go through this band and we would put everything we had into it and then it would fail and we would break up and it would be like losing a lover and then 6 months later you start again. And I realized, you know, that's a bad way to keep going about things. So being a drummer, I decided everyone needs a drummer. I started playing with everybody I possibly could. So at one point, I was in six or seven different bands and juggling all that. And I said, you know, at some point, at least this increases my odds. And luckily, with the Alloy Orchestra coming along, it came along at a great time. And you know, it was a combination of blind luck and hard work and the experience that you never really thought would happen. And then we took it and we ran with it. And it's been the greatest experience. I couldn't ask for a better musical outlet.
And Ken Winokur and Roger Miller have similar musical experiences?
Well, yes. Ken also would play in varying little rock bands around Boston with limited success commercially. And Roger Miller, slightly different, he was in a band, well, still is, called Mission of Burma, which was very prevalent in the late 70s, early 80s in the punk rock scene in Boston. They took a hiatus for about 20 years, and due to popular demand, they started playing again. And now they've put out more records than they did when they first started, and they're touring as well. So it's a juggling act for us to book our gigs around their gigs and vice versa. But so he is very multi-talented, and he also does a lot of film scoring on his own for small documentaries and things like that.
Going back to what you said earlier about how you create the music to fit the scene, in the Buster Keaton movie in The General, you vary from what sounds to me like a tuba to piccolo. How did you arrive on that musical diversion?
Well, again, having the synthesizer, you are able to come up with any sound you want, which is really helpful. And although we would rather have a full orchestra and real tuba players, you know, at least it gives us the opportunity to use those sounds. So those combined with our acoustic sounds and the drums and the out-of-tune pieces of metal and horseshoes, I think the acoustic stuff helps the synthesized stuff not sound too artificial. But again, we use this as we're scoring. There's conversation about sounds. Tubas generally go along with funny. I don't know why that is, but there's, you know, slow tubas I thought of as funny. So there's certain tricks that you just kind of know. And especially with comedies, you can use a lot more of those kind of standard tricks, you know, the dastardly villain, you know, and the pretty girl gets the little bells, you know. There's a lot of like basic easy tricks you can use with comedy films. When you get to the more serious or the dramatic, then those rules in our mind change a little bit anyway. One thing we really try to do is not necessarily sound like the 1920s, where most of these films are from. We try to sound like what we feel is appropriate to that film right now. So we're not trying to really look back in time, which I think that really helps for modern audiences. So it doesn't sound like a dusty old thing. You know, it sounds like a new and vibrant and viable piece of art right now with the film and the music and the whole live experience.
Could you characterize the difference between what you see as appropriate now in 2013 versus what was appropriate when the films were made almost 100 years ago?
Well, I think just the musical styles have changed so much. Honky-tonk piano and ragtime piano and jazz, I mean, that was cutting edge then, but it's sort of more archaic now. There's been, we figure there's been another 100 years or so of musical inspiration, and, you know, with the advent of TV and the talkies, and there's certain things that modern audiences expect to hear that just weren't available back in the 20s. Also, the attention span is somewhat different. Everything is so edited and so quick and so fast-paced to make some of these films, which can be a little slower or more flowing. It takes what we feel is more of a modern approach to make that still as exciting as it was back in the day.
Comparing the themes of the movies between silent movies and current movies, what would be your comments?
Well, that all depends on the individual scene and the individual film and the individual composer. What I feel like is I'm a little more in tune to it than I would think the average moviegoer, but I am still so into going to the movies that if the music really works, I am much less likely to notice it than if the music doesn't. And if I feel like the music doesn't work, it sticks out like a sore thumb, and that just ruins the whole experience for me. But if the music works, you just get wrapped up in it. And that's what we're attempting to do, you know, get to the point where you're completely wrapped up into it. And the biggest compliment we can get is when people in the audience say, you know, we watched that movie for an hour and a half, completely forgot you were there, which is great. And also the other best compliment we can get, which is kind of the opposite. You know, next time I'm going to watch the movie because I loved watching and listening to you guys so much. So it gives you, our presentation gives you a lot of things to focus on and a lot of ways to enjoy it.
Well, Terry Donahue, I want to thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, a couple of questions about you. Is there an aha or a eureka moment that changed your life that you could share with us?
Well, I would have to say that was when I was in the second grade, and I was chosen by my second grade teacher to sing the lead in the big school presentation. I would sing the verses, and the whole class would sing the chorus of, it was Catholic school, so some religious song. But one, I was so honored to be chosen, and two, it was such a great feeling, even though I was completely scared to death. Like, this is what I wanted to do. So I knew I wanted to do something musically from the second grade on.
And other than what you've told us about in the Alloy Orchestra, what would you like to do with the remainder of your one precious life?
Well, the beauty of the Alloy Orchestra is each film puts you in a different situation and somewhere else musically. So it's constantly challenging and constantly broadening my palette, as it were. And it's such a dream job. So as far as a job, I really can't imagine doing anything like that, doing anything other than that. You know, it would be great to have a teardrop trailer and take a couple years off and travel around. But will that happen? I'm not sure.
And finally, Terry Donahue, is there a film or a book that you could recommend to our listeners, or perhaps one of each?
I do have one of each. I would recommend the book called Accordion Crimes. I believe the author is Annie Pruhl. It's a story that follows an accordion from when it was built and to the end of its time. And it's also follows it all around America. And it's a great tribute to all the diversity of Americans and all their ethnic backgrounds and how they all use the accordion in their own way. And at the same time, it's crimes and murders and death follow it along as well. So it's a very interesting read. And as far as a movie, there's a French movie called Delicatessen that I just think everyone in the world should see. One, I'm a musical saw player, so there's some beautiful musical saw and cello playing in it. But it's a fabulously visual experience.
One more question, Terry. Can you tell us what a musical saw is?
Well, a musical saw at this stage is a specially made saw that's a little bit thinner than your regular hardware store saw at this point. Back in the old days, it was an Appalachian instrument used in the jug bands and washtub bass and catgut string banjos, and people would take their old saw and either bow it with a bow or hit it with a rubber hammer. Then it sort of fell out of favor for a while, and now it seems to be having quite a resurgence. I'm hearing it more, maybe I'm a little more in tune to it, but I'm hearing more of it here and there. But it's such a eerie sound. It's somewhere between a theremin, if you're familiar with the sound of a theremin, and a woman singing, sort of a tortured woman singing. But it's such a beautiful instrument. It's great for horror movies. It's great for mystery movies, any kind of wandering voice from afar kind of thing.
Terry Donahue, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Well, Barry, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Terry Donahue is a partner in the Alloy Orchestra, a group of multi-talented musicians with widely diverse abilities, which provides new musical background to the silent films of the 1920s. The orchestra's website is Alloy, A-L-L-O-Y, orchestra.com. The book Terry Donahue recommends is Accordion Crimes by Annie Pruhl, P-R-O-U-L-X. And Delicatessen is the movie he recommends. Over 400 Radio Curious programs may be found on our website, radiocurious.org. They're free as my gift to you. I hope you enjoy them. The phone is 707-462-6541, and email is curious@radiocurious.org. Christina Onnestad is our assistant producer. I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.